Writing for audio drama. Man starts a lawnmower. Fade to conversation about writing audio drama. I'm Brian Lincoln from Brian Lincoln Productions. I am starting up a new thing here that I plan to release here on the Audio Drama Production Podcast. That is a segment on writing for audio drama. I've done an audio drama before called Hidden Harbor Mysteries, and in the meantime, after that show wrapped up, I've been writing and putting together a new show, a sci-fi show, and very forefront in my mind lately has been writing and formulating a show. I've been doing that for over a year now, and I've done a tremendous amount of research, but there's a really low amount of material out there for writing for audio specifically. There's a little bit, but a lot of what I've found are podcasts on script writing and screenwriting and Hollywood stuff, which is very useful information, but it doesn't really cover everything we need to think about. So I thought it would be useful, especially since we have such a vibrant community right now, to try to get different people together and have some good discussions on different topics about writing for audio drama. It will certainly help me and hopefully help other people in the community. To start us off, I want to first introduce Eli McElveen from Alba Salix, Royal Physician. Hey, Eli.
Hi there. Nice to be here.
Eli was one of the people who, when I suggested the idea for a segment on the show, came up with a topic, which we'll get to in a minute, that I'm really excited about. But Eli, why don't you let people know who you are and what you've done?
Hi, I'm Eli McElveen, creator and writer of a comedy series called Alba Salix Royal Physician, as you said. It's a fairy tale medical show, and we put out 6 episodes last year. I am currently working on scripts for our first spinoff, which is a show called The Axe and Crown.
So is that where your writing thoughts have been lately?
Lately, yeah. So a lot of setup and kind of like you've been talking about with your new series.
Okay, great. Next up, we have Michael McQuilkin, who is a writer and performer on Hadron Gospel Hour, which this year alone has won a Parsec Award for Audio Drama Long Form and a Geeky Award for Best Podcast. Welcome, Mike.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
And is your work, is it the kind of thing people can find about you centered just on Hadron, or is there anything else out there?
Yeah, the only thing worth noting, I think, probably right now, it's all been a lead up to Hadron.
Yeah.
My partner and I, Rich Wentworth, who we co-produced the show. We've been working together since second grade, technically. So a lot of scrapped ideas, but we're happy where we landed on this one.
Well, you landed with something that's pretty amazing, so I'm glad you did.
Thank you.
And to round out the round table is Mr. Roundtable himself, Dave Robison, host of the Roundtable podcast, which is a podcast about writing. It's got a tremendous, tremendous backlog. If you want to go listen to some brainstorming sessions with just a slew of talented authors. And he also has a very strong background in audio drama. I know Dave very, very well. We've met in person multiple times at conventions and whatnot and writing retreats. And so Dave is Mr. Enthusiasm. Welcome, Dave. I won't give you the kind of intro you give other people for your show, but that's what I got.
I'm totally down with that. And honestly, this, when you extended this invitation, it was like, oh, hell yeah, I got to be on this. back in 2003, 2004, when the digital audio experience and the podcasting and everything really started to take off, my wife and I ran a nonprofit radio theater company called Rabbit Hole Radio Theater. And we wrote and produced over 40 hours of original audio dramas for a theater company in Fort Collins, Colorado. And that was such an amazing experience because we started off knowing absolutely nothing about audio drama other than what we'd heard. And you enjoy audio drama, you listen to it, it's cool, but then you sit down to write it and it's like, holy crap, what is this? And I will tell you, you had mentioned, Brian, the dearth of content out there for the crafting of audio dramas, and you're absolutely right. However, there is one document that I can send everybody to It's called The Well-Tempered Audio Dramatist by Yuri Rasovsky. Right. And the National Audio Theaters Festival's website is hosting this up on their website. And it is a, you know, 200-page treatise on the crafting of audio drama, focusing largely on scripts, but also on production as well. And awesome. I recommend that.
Yeah, I'll have to have you send me that name because I'm not going to spell it right for my life.
I'll do it. I'll do it. You can throw it in the liner notes.
Yeah, I'll pass it on to our good friends over at the ADPP and see if they can link it in the notes. All right, so the topic I wanted to get to today, I have no idea how long we're going to do this for. Obviously, we should stay on topic if this is going to be useful to people. The topic for this time that I really want to pass it off to Eli with this, but he came up with this idea as one of his short list of ideas that he was interested in talking about if I was to have him as a guest. And the topic was really at the setup stage of developing a show, what to think about in terms of characters and structure. And this is very, very much on my mind in the way one of the key ideas that I had to work with in order to come up with the show that I'm doing right now. So I wanted, Eli, is there anything more you wanted to bring to the table in terms of what you wanted to talk about?
Yeah. I mean, we can talk about like setting the tone for your series. What's it going to feel like? There's also the question of like the format or kind of the why is this an audio piece? Is it like a pure drama or comedy is there narration? Is there no narration? Is it like pretending to be found tapes or a mockumentary style? Just like all the little questions for setting up, as well as I'm not sure how deeply you want to get into like setting up characters and the structure of the character relationships at the heart of the series.
Yeah, I have definite thoughts on all of that. I would say, first of all, I think one of the key ideas, and I'll pass it around the whole table in a sec, but one of the key ideas that really comes to mind for me when trying to figure out what kind of a show to do has to do with what kinds of resources I have in terms of people, because it's a collaborative effort. So it's one thing to try to write something and then later on try to cast the thing that's written and really say the story is the thing and just find the right people. It's another thing when you already know who you want to work with and kind of cater things to them. So if you have a really, really great narrator type person around and you just hear their voice in telling a story, maybe you want to write a narrator. Maybe you don't if you really have a movie in your mind, literally a movie type of sound is what you want to do. So I think a lot of what I keep in mind in deciding, and there's no right answer on this stuff, it really is going to be whatever's right for your project. But I really think about what my resources are and how to put them together in the best way. How about you, Mike? When you guys came up with your show, it's one of the best structured shows I've heard.
Oh, thanks.
It's so well...
I just came here for the compliments, by the way. Well, I have little to offer.
Well, it's probably my favorite podcast right now because it's just... I'm always laughing my ass off. I think you and Rich do such a great job performance-wise. But there's a definite structure to that show. I mean, you have your characters are, you know, very memorable characters. And your episodes really set up a problem. And, you know, the problem is solved by the end of the episode. I mean, that's got to be a challenge to write comedy and a tight story like that.
Well, yeah. Going back to what you said about dealing with the resources that you have readily available, we had come from a lot of sort of half-started, half, you know, not failed, but, you know, projects that just became exercises that we were really excited about. And then for whatever reason, they fizzled out. And, you know, my ego blames who we had involved, not ourselves, but the truth of the matter is that's a very important stage of developing, where who is available and do you have characters in mind that are already based on people you know, or that people that are going to be involved or not. So in this case with Hadron, Rich is, he'll often say that Dr. Oppenheimer is based on all the parts of himself that he's afraid are true. my character, Mike Wilkinson, it's a clever last name thing. Maybe.
Yeah, nice.
Scottish. So Mike Wilkinson is sort of me, but stripped down. Some of the nuances are sort of I like to say fine tuned to a dull point because of the comedic nature of where we are. So it's sort of he's dumber and less focused than me for the purpose of getting the story going where it needs to go, and perhaps a little smarter than me in ways that make the story go. So but still loosely based on me. So there's we went into it with so there's a familiarity with the characters that can take advantage of the kind of shorthand that Rich and I have sort of come up with just writing together for so long.
So speaking of writing together, do you sort of take turns, or do you do most of it? Like, how does that shake down?
We start the season off with an overreaching arc, just like some center of the universe for the season that we're going to revolve around and get to eventually, or avoid and then look back on, depending on how we want the season to go. So then, and then we do at least a couple of sentences or paragraphs for each episode. And that can range from just a log line type thing of just like a Higsby based, he's one of the characters in our pantheon of characters, but it could just be a Higsby based episode where, you know, he's sort of it's like Death Takes a Holiday, but, you know, in space. Or
in space. Right.
What we found, though, in the second season, that the more we write at that stage, the easier it is to get through the script, because there's sort of like a lot of energy to mine from those, that initial meeting that we do at the beginning of the season. And then, I mean, obviously we have an ongoing dialogue throughout, you know, every day, pretty much. We'll talk about either the episode that we're on or the episode that we're going to do after this one, or, you know, but just to sort of keep everything on pace for the overreaching arc of the season. But the way we've been doing the scripts is we pick the ones that we want to do and we alternate for the most part. So I'll do one, he'll do one, and that'll allow us to focus on the production aspect of it and swap off some of those roles.
Now, as far as structure, I mean, because it's really, you have a target amount of time, you have to set up a problem, solve a problem. Do you have like page targets at all, or is it just more of a as it flows type of process?
Well, we have a lot. There's a lot of, obviously it's very dialogue heavy, being audio only, but we've, there's a lot of over talking, you know, like that, you know, Orson Welles did it, and what's the guy's name? Gosford Park there. Can't remember the director, but he, a lot of characters, you know, talking over each other, or, you know, jumping on the line just at the moment to make it more conversational and fast paced. And that, a lot of that is just our, the comedic base that we've sort of like come up with. So a lot of our scripts, they'll be 40 minutes long, but it's 90 pages. So it's just because, you know, all the dialogue and, you know, anyone who's seen the script, it's sort of like squished in the middle there. We use the standard script format. So
you do have a standard script format.
Yeah, we use just I come from a film background, and you know, Rich has worked with me on a lot of that stuff too. So it just made sense to do it that way because we were familiar with it and we knew the format. And Google Docs actually has a a free template, so we figured out, well, that's, we're going
there. You go get that URL to Brian so he can put that in the liner notes too. That's an invaluable resource.
Oh yeah, with the quote, free's good,
free is excellent.
Free is good. Price is right. So yeah,
cool. How about you, Dave? Did you develop any sort of a process when you were coming up with ideas?
Oh yeah, big time. And actually, there's a couple of things I need to toss out before I get to that. First of all, people that are listening to this podcast right now, they're hearing, you know, Brian's working on this episodic arc, and Mike is, and Eli's talking about it too. I will tell you, if you have never done radio drama before, sweet mother of audio, do not do a massive, massive epic 13 episode arc for your first attempt. Do an anthology, do short, discrete scripts, do 12 of them and call it a season. but holy crap, do not take on the added burden of trying to sustain a narrative across 13 episodes. We did that in our first season with The Rabbit, and there is no effing way we would ever do that again. I would go back in time to myself and say, Dave, don't do it. So that's my first thing. The other thing, and I think that everybody has kind of affirmed here, is that radio drama does not happen alone. Writers can write novels alone. Script writers can write scripts alone. But when you're talking about actually making this happen, you are perforce introducing yourself into a framework that it requires a network.
A collaborative.
And yeah, very much so. And even if, you know, you're handing people scripts, as soon as an actor is infusing themselves into that script, it becomes a collaboration. Mm-hmm. So cultivating the first thing I think every radio drama person can do is cultivate their network. And there are 100 ways to do that. And we can talk about that if you want. But to your question, Brian, we knew that our episodes of our radio dramas were going to be aired on the local public radio station, which was very cool because we hadn't embraced the whole podcasting thing yet. But that also meant that we were stuck at 30 minutes, baby. We had absolutely no wiggle room. So, Mike, your script template, oh, yeah. We used the Courier font. Yep. We had set letting, so you had fixed widths, and you knew that literally a 23-page script equals a half hour once you include intro and outro credits. Mm-hmm. Bam. So that was a stricture that we had. We knew we wanted to do seasons. And like I say, for some god-awful reason, we decided the first one was going to be this massive epic thing. But thereafter, and to again speak to your question, Brian, we wanted to find a framework that evoked story. That when you hear it, you say, oh, crap, I've got to hear the stories in that thing. When somebody pitches this season's about this. Like one season was all about the major, we called it the Major Arcana. And every episode, it was an anthology focused on one of the cards of the Major Arcana and told a radio play that described in some way the theme of that card. So anybody that knows the tarot is going to go, oh, I can't wait till they do the death card. I can't wait till they do the lover card, you know, blah, blah, blah. But instantly there's a built-in hook. There's an interest. There's a desire, not only on the listener's part, but also on the writers. The writers go, oh, yeah, I want a piece of that. And we had a team of writers, and that's an option. You know, Mike, obviously, Eli, I don't know. Do you have a team of writers, or are you pretty much the brain trust for scripts?
I'm at right now.
Have you worked collaboratively?
Not yet. A little bit. There's a series that we're just kind of testing the waters on. I'm just kind of tossing some ideas back and forth with an old friend that I know from back when I was in campus radio at the University of Waterloo. It's pretty neat. And having someone, a second brain in on it to just suddenly explode all these ideas that I just been... I thought we were a little bit pedestrian. All of a sudden they took on this crazy new energy with my friend's contributions. So I'm hoping that that we have time to explore that once this next project is on the go.
Having another set of eyes or ears on the writing that you trust is almost always additive. It's almost
absolutely expansive. And at the conceptual stage, at the outlining and rough sketch stage, once you've written a script in writing a novel, once you finish the novel, that's kind of when the fun begins, because now you can rip out things and blah, blah, blah.
Right.
A script, not so much. Right. At least in my experience, once the script is written, there's a real tendency on the writer's part to hold on tight and defend the stuff that's gone in there. Yeah, I like that idea. You're absolutely right, Mike. And you know, if you sketch out your scripts and then brainstorm them with, like you say, a trusted eye or creative mind, I think, as Eli is discovering, a whole universe of cool perspectives comes in, even with just one other person in the room.
Yeah.
Right. So as you said, there's a pace to it too, that you find after a while that becomes sort of all important. So like you said, it is difficult to more difficult to take things out of a finished script. However, it almost always seems like a concession, but because when you take something out, it cascades throughout the whole story and you have to sort of, you know, preen throughout the entire thing. If you have somebody else there where it makes sense to you know, everyone, then it's a lot easier to sort of like get to where you need to go, because you have more than one person saying, well, this isn't the pace that we want. This isn't the beat that we want. So, it you know, it makes sense.
Yeah.
On that set.
Absolutely. And don't limit yourself. There are some amazing things going on out there. Welcome to Night Vale. What is it? Line Street is another one that I just
Lime
heard.
Lime Town, I think.
Lime Town. Yes, that's it. Thank you. That's taking, like, as you invoked, Eli, you know, the whole mockumentary or this is something that's fiction, but it's framed in this journalistic style that still involves a storytelling aspect. The more, well, and it really kind of depends on the story that you want to tell and what that framing mechanism is. But don't limit yourself when you first dive into the idea of I want to do a radio drama. Figure out what that story is and then figure out what the best frame is for that. And the rest will take care of itself. If it's true to the story heart and it's going to enhance the storytelling, then it's the right way to go.
And if it's something that you haven't seen that you want to see, which I think should be the core of every sort of driving force. And also assume that your audience is sophisticated, because they are.
They are. Yeah. Absolutely. Well, and I will caution against innovation for the sake of innovation.
No, right.
But it's, and again, you know, everything links down to the story. And Brian, as you invoked, the characters. And I guess that would actually be the next step, is once you have your frame, figuring out who is going to be telling that story, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, when it comes to structure, I think what we need to take home from structure is, you know, it's good to have a lot of forethought into what your structure should be. If you're doing a random walk, it's going to probably go nowhere. So I think shows that are well structured really tend to stand out for me. But I think also what you fill that structure with is as important. So I think we should maybe turn the attention to character a little bit. When you have your structure, say you have a show like yours, Dave, where you have really one-off stories that are linked together in some way, or Mike, where you have a show with a very episodic type of "this is the problem of the week" type of episode with the very consistent cast. What did you? And I'll start with you, Mike. What did you guys do in terms of character development at the beginning? Because I mean, sometimes with shows like that, you kind of start with your main ones and you add some in that become regular down the road. I've noticed that. But when you're coming up with a character, like, what kinds of thoughts are going into that?
I myself, I'm sort of a dialogue snob. Mm-hmm. So I think there was years where
what is a dialogue snob? Describe what that is first.
I've set the bar very high for dialogue for me, because I think especially in this sort of, you know, audio only structure, that's what really drives every story for me is not necessarily the story. It's the characters that navigate the story.
Okay, Brian, so, put a pin in the let's talk about dialogue episode and bring Mike back. I want to be here for that, because that sounds like an intriguing conversation. I'm sorry, didn't mean to interrupt. Carry on, Mike.
Maybe snob's not the right word.
No, it's a good word. It's a good word. Dialogue's important.
It's a hot button. So now I forgot the original question.
Having to do with the ideas of that really go into designing the characters for your show.
So we have the dollhouse, the structure, the you know, the playground that everything's going to be in. In this case, for instance, it's this bunker structure floating on the precipice of this multi-dimensional rift in space-time. Which is kind of a cheat, so we can go anywhere and do anything.
It's very cool.
Well, it's meant to be evocative as well, in sort of like
a mind's eye.
The characters, it's not filling a void. It's just who we want to see in there to make the story go, or to sort of bring something out of the core characters that we haven't seen yet. How would they react to, you know, a Tron-like character showing up out of nowhere, or you know, a ghost Dungeons & Dragons character who's actually just an avatar of this psychic role player, you know, on another timeline that's occupying their bunker for no reason. So, you know, and we sort of like try to answer those questions before we start into the story. Like, what would Oppenheimer do? What would Mike do? Would they engage? Would they try to help? Would they? And in being honest with those explorations. Of the responses there, we we figure, you know, it's a win-win because we get to come up with a story based on those responses. And we also get to enrich the core characters a little bit based on how they respond among, you know, around these other characters, but not in a window dressing sort of way, but just in a really, like, we try to have every character come in, not just to be as a, you know, a gag or a joke or whatever, but just to have a real organic interaction with the existing characters and to sort of expand the universe a little bit that way.
Mike, that is an awesome framework for your character structure because you've got your core characters, but you're under no particular constraint then to, you know, have continuity from episode to episode, except for the canon that you established for those characters themselves. So the listener loves those characters, but every episode can be different. That's brilliant.
Oh, thanks. You can play with the interactions in the sense that there may be some unexpected responses from the core characters that, you know, are pleasant surprises or, you know, but if after a few episodes, people are familiar with them enough, whereas you can't cheat that. So that has to be like not necessarily on rails, but there is a canon there that you have to acknowledge. We've toyed with the idea of writing a Bible because we're dealing with science fiction too. And even though it's a comedy, we do take it seriously, all of the ridiculous concepts that we come up with. And if we can't explain it, then we feel like it's a cheat. The only thing we haven't done has explained why Higgsby, the Higgs boson particle, is sentient and can do anything. So as a joke, we have him, as an ongoing gag, we have him start to explain it. And then there's an interruption. Someone comes in the room. It's like,
There's a fire.
Yeah.
Let him talk. Damn it.
But that's the only one we haven't explained. Everything else, even though it's a comedy, we want to take every aspect of it fairly seriously.
Yeah. I think that's an axiom. I think that's a good axiom for production. You know, even if you're doing a comedy, take it seriously.
Right. Right. Commit again, sophisticated audience.
The other thing I really want to point out, though, with Hadron as an example, is the fact that not only are your characters well developed, but they're pretty iconic. I mean, one guy is a torso sticking out of a wall. Another one is a Higgs boson particle. So, I mean, these are not just run of the mill. Okay, the butler and the maid, and you know what I mean? Like, they're very, very unique characters. And I think that helps the show get its character as well.
And that's, you know, that iconic, you know, that's very off the wall and very cool and lends itself to the stories that Mike's telling. You could very easily, you know, if you wanted to do an Upstairs Downstairs or a Downton Abbey in audio, you could make the butler and the maid on work. Absolutely. You're catering to a different audience and a different type of story. But, you know, those characters in Mike's framework are perfect for his framework. And Eli, I'm sure you're evolving the same things as you advance forward, right?
Yeah, I wanted to ask you, Eli, about Alba Salix. I can't even say it. Like, what kind of character thoughts went into that show?
I'd come up with the idea of fairy tale medical show as just at the end of a long process of casting about for new ideas. I was looking for something that was relatively episodic as opposed to big overarching stories and you know, shorter length than the scripts I'd been writing up to that point, and then ended up creating something that was pretty much exactly as complicated as anything else I'd
always
done.
Always
yeah.
Scope creep.
Yeah.
I'm gonna take a break with this new idea. Nope.
Yeah. I'm trying very, very hard and so far successfully with the spinoff, which I can talk about later, but Alba itself was like, so it's a hospital show. So there's a witch at the center of it. And she,
as you
concept,
do.
Yeah. The concept for her was pretty much, fully formed at the very beginning, kind of a little bit of like Terry Pratchett to her. And there was on the one side, there was Holly, who's more like the fairy herbalist. She's a bit hippie, bit of a stoner. And on the other side, there's Magnus, who's he was originally going to be more of a, like a faith healer, and kind of dangerous, slightly psychopathic, doctor who cured everybody by, you know, cutting and stabbing and all that kind of stuff. But it started to really gel, I think, when I made him subordinate. He's now the apprentice. he comes into the story as just this kid that gets fobbed off on Alba. And so since she's the authority, there's a bit of tension in the power structure. So he wants to be, you know, the badass and cut people open and things, but he's not allowed to. So there's that's kind of a running gag throughout the whole thing.
Well, I think that's critical. I think you hit on a really key point there, Eli, yeah, that as you're building that core cast of characters, if that's the route you're going, that you've got to build in the network between them and have that spark, have that be interesting. Because you said as soon as you made him subordinate, things gelled, right?
Oh, yeah. And there's I think it's even more critical with an audio series where you've got, for production reasons and also for just the ease of your audience getting into the show, a smaller cast is generally better. So coming up with a set of characters who can really strike sparks off each other and inspire a lot of stories between them is crucial.
And they can occupy, if it's a smaller core group, they can occupy, believably, a lot more abstract story space. Mm. And take advantage of certain gaps to the ultimate goal, the episode or the story or the series or whatever. You know, they can occupy a lot more, and that makes them, if you give them that room at the beginning, then there's a lot more organically that they can do that's believable. You know, if there's a lot of people at the beginning, it's like, this is the funny guy, this is the wise ass, this is the guy with the shield, you know, this,
yeah.
This is the clear leader, but this is the actual leader. But if you have those, if you narrow it down too early on, I feel like you're limiting yourself for the character's growth and believable interaction. You know,
yeah.
I think you'll find yourself, just putting in stop gaps as a result to just fill in spots. And I think, again, sophisticated audience, they'll know that it's just a piece of window dressing to get you from point A to point B, or if it's, you know, a believable change or growth in this character to get you from point A to point B.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, character growth is an interesting topic because I was noticing that in certain things I like that I listen to or watch on TV or whatever, when they pull a twist like two seasons in and you're like, wow, that was set up in the first episode.
Like, it's a great payoff. Yeah. Sort of payoff you can have if you have sort of like a smaller core, you know, a lot of you can reveal it slower over the course of, you know, the episodes, and there's just more room for growth there.
Yeah, and I think that comes from really knowing your characters in immense detail before you start. You're flexible while you're writing to figure things out as you go, but if you have a much deeper plan than you reveal at the beginning, I think that depth shows up even if it's subtle.
Right. Which points very, very emphatically to axiom number two, write your entire season before you start production.
Yes. Oh, yes.
Because you can't get that cool plot twist in season two until you realize what it is after you're done writing season one, which means then you need to go back and retcon episode three to plant the seed for that. Yeah. And you can't do that if you're building on the fly. God, don't do that.
You hear that, X-Files and Mad Men season five?
Lost and so many others.
Well, right. It's just, well, the whole idea, I love the fact that we're going to the European 10-episode, 13-episode arc. It's just like, let the stuff breathe. You know,
yes.
Don't just keep on churning it out. It's clear that, you know, that 28 episodes or 32 episodes or whatever they do on a broadcast season up until recently is just a money grab, and the very few shows, I think, if you compare them to this new golden age of television, were as successful in story craft and character generation as they are now. But I digress.
But you're saying that character, that really strong character development, comes out of structure in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
And yes. It's an evolution, and it's an evolution that doesn't happen until you actually write those scripts.
Yeah.
You know, whether you're a pantser and you're winging it and you're not sure where you're going, that's fine. But get to the end and know what your story arc is, and then go back and refine. And any veteran writer will tell you that the discoveries that you make at the end, when you type the end on the last episode, are going to be more profound and more badass than the cool conceptions and conceits you came up with at episode one.
Right.
So finish your scripts before you produce them.
Because that's how real life works.
Yeah.
I think preternaturally, we all know what a good story is. Everyone knows what a good story is. It's just, it's in our blood. It's innate. So the thing is, it's paying attention to the beats and the way things are revealed. And, you know, if you think back to all the things that you like, you know, if you really explore it and look at the details and the specifics of why you like it, you'll find, you'll hear that beat. You'll see that those reveals, and you'll know that you like those characters and you believe what they were doing. And that, I think, is the core of the problem solving that you're going to need when you're doing it yourself. To Dave's point, you don't want to start with the problem of we don't have an ending. You know what I mean? Because there's plenty of problem solving when you're telling the story. Tons and tons and tons of problem solving. It's all about that. But you don't want to treat it like Tetris either, you know, because then you're using rough hewn edges, and that things don't are going to overlap, and you're going to have 90 degree angles that don't make any sense. And it's just there's plenty of problem solving to be done. Don't start off with a major problem by not having anything.
But there is one other point, though, that I think we should emphasize a little bit, is that having the whole arc written out is really important for not having that wandering that ruins so many shows. But at the same time, I think you do want to, especially in the audio format, remain flexible. So if an actor surprises you, you can kind of run with it.
Sure. Taking advantage of that. Sure. Yeah. That's taking advantage of the collaboration that couldn't have been.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Couldn't have been predicted until the collaboration occurred. Yeah, that's definitely, you want to strike when the iron's hot when that happens.
Which brings up axiom number three: produce all your episodes before you start releasing them so that when that actor surprises you in the sixth episode and you go, holy crap, I could do this, you still have time to go back, retcon the scenes, bring the actors in for whatever tweaks and adjustments you need, and your final product ends up being that much stronger.
Hold on, I'm writing that down. Axiom number three. That's where we screwed up.
Damn it. And Brian, you've already discovered that, I think, in your process with your project, right?
Yeah, I mean, I've learned a lot about sort of, because this is the first project that I've written myself. I've been producing other people's stuff, and I've noticed, for example, that there might be a sort of a block of text where people are having a conversation. You realize the very last sentence was delivered in a way that conveyed the whole freaking paragraph, and you just drop the rest. You know what I mean? Like you realize that what the actors can bring just in terms of
inflection.
Yeah, exactly.
Presence. Yeah, definitely.
And so you learn to really cull down and really reduce the amount that you actually have to put down in order to get everything across. But of course, that comes with delivery as well. You have to, you know, if the actor doesn't bring that inflection, then there's nothing on the page.
You'd be surprised how many people do not have that flexibility. I've seen really good actors, like I've worked on other projects here and there. I've seen really good actors really want to come in and offer something, and it just gets squashed because people are hung up on this very specific tone. And that's I understand, you know, wanting to sort of get what you have in your head out there. And that's fine. But you have to, if there's a moment that something can expand, just because you didn't predict it doesn't mean that you shouldn't take advantage of it. And it won't be appreciated by, you know, people listening.
Yeah.
There's tons of people that just like don't see that. They get the tunnel vision, the horse blinders on, when you know that. And, you know, we've been guilty of that. Definitely. We're you know, we'll listen to some other, usually it's in the editing stage where someone's, you know, give me 4 or 5 or 6 takes. And, you know, usually I'll say, okay, that's fine. Or I have what I need, but if they want to give a few more, that's fine. But I feel like I'm humoring them. But then when I hear it in post, it's like, oh, I really wish you would have cultivated that more, because he came up with something. He or she came up with like this great angle that you could not have predicted it. So just be open to that, I guess.
And the actor's craft is very different from the writer's craft.
Absolutely.
And not many writers are, well, actually, I take that back. About 65% of all the writers we have on the roundtable have theater backgrounds somewhere in there.
But if
you don't have that writer, that dramatic background, that dramatic experience, accept the fact that the creative process of the vocal performer is very different from the creative process of the writer. And trust that, embrace that, expect that, as you observed, Brian, and work that into your creative cycle. And let them surprise you and expose new things that you didn't see because you're not an actor. You're not acting that role.
Yeah, absolutely. Why don't we go around one last time and sort of give sort of a final like words of advice for somebody that's at sort of the concept stage, like maybe either a general final thought or a quick tidbit story of something that you'd like to pass on relating to what you've done. I guess start with... Eli, I guess.
All right. I in creating the series, I try out a lot of exploratory scenes and I figure out how the characters are different with one another. We talked a bit about the dynamics that they have with each other. Figure out how they act differently with each individual person that they're interacting with, I guess. I'm always prepared for a lot of dead ends and loose ends, and before the I actually get around to the first really solid feeling episode. But in the end, if you've got a solid set of character dynamics, that'll take you places.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. How about you, Dave?
I'm just going to actually sum up and recap what we've covered. 'Cause this has been gold, for the fledgling. And I think for the veteran audio drama producer, writer, is embrace your network, build your network early. However you do that, Twitter, Facebook, emails, whatever, reach out and build that network early on. Accept the collaborative nature of the process in terms of idea development and bouncing ideas off of other people. Write your season first so you can go back and integrate all those cool ideas into either the previous episodes or the next season. And then let the actors and the sound techs and all the other people that are going to be involved in your production, let them surprise you and give them the same creative authority you gave yourself when you actually sat down to write the script. I think that's key.
Mike?
Be honest with yourselves. Before you even put pen to paper or finger to keyboard, why are you doing this? You know, I said, just to refer back to what I said before, we all know a good story, and you know, just innately. So if you're doing this because you really like that last Doctor Who episode that you saw and you want to do something similar, that's great. That's an excellent exercise, but that's called emulation. And the world doesn't necessarily need more of that. If you want to do that as an exercise, by all means do it. But I think give yourself lofty goals. Put something out there that you haven't seen, you want to see. We all know that there's something out there that we haven't seen that we want to see, and it's going to filter through you. So that's exciting enough, right? Something's going to filter through you and become real. That should be the main reason to do it. If you're just doing it because I love fantasy, I love science fiction, wouldn't it be cool if I got some of my friends to say some of these lines that I made? And I'm not to completely dismiss that again, because that's a good exercise, but there's got to be a reason why you want to do this before you even start. And from there, if you let that inform all the decisions you make later on as you're structuring the story and structuring the world and the existence, I think you'll treat it with a little more. This is where it's okay to be precious, because it's yours. And it's okay to be precious about the story. It's okay to be precious about the characters, because they have to feel and feel real to you. And that should be the core reason to just to embark on this journey in the first place.
Make sure you're in service to something other than yourself.
Right.
Make sure you're in service to the story or the idea or whatever that is. Yeah, that's good advice.
Right.
Yeah, and I'll round it out by saying, you know, we're talking about writing for audio drama, and I'm making a pretty big assumption that a lot of these people who are writing them are also involved in making them. And with that assumption in place, just remember, when you're building your characters and you're building your, you know, the sort of shape of your story and how many episodes and how deep it goes and all that stuff, this is the opportunity to make things easier for yourself.
Right.
So be very, very cognizant of, you certainly can make difficult choices or give yourself challenges. That's par for the course, but just be aware that some choices you will very, very much regret not thinking a little harder about it at this stage later on if you're not really having put enough thought into it at the beginning. Because when you're putting a show together, you really want to work to your strengths. And your strengths will be different from anyone else's strengths, and that's why your show will be different. But I really think that your emphasis should always be on what am I good at, what are the people I collaborate with good at, and how can I put that together in a way that I will not get tired of doing.
Nice.
That's like awesome. That scene in Apollo 13 with all the parts on the table.
Yeah.
That's what you get to work with.
Or in The Martian, you know, I'm going to have to science that beep out of this. That's awesome. Yeah, Great movie.
Looks amazing.
I haven't seen it yet. It's on my list.
Okay. I didn't give anything away. There was no spoilers. I think that was one of the trailers.
I just got the audiobook too.
Wait a minute. He's on Mars? That's a major spoiler.
Wait, what?
As we close out, why don't we go through each of us and we can talk as long as we want to about what we're doing and what we want to point people to. So cool. Why don't we start with you, Dave, since you're ready.
Okay. Well, obviously the Roundtable Podcast at www.roundtablepodcast.com. You can check that out. Weekly episodes up there. One of the things that's really exciting me, and it's actually very germane to this conversation, is I've been made the audio director for the Ed Greenwood Group, which it's huge, man. They have a new project that just launched, and it's still ramping up, but it's called Under Librum, O-N-D-E-R-L-I-B-R-U-M, Under Librum, just underlibrum.com. This is 15 shared story settings, everything from epic fantasy to urban fantasy to gothic horror to space opera. And these are all settings that Ed Greenwood has created, and he's inviting anyone they want to come and play and tell stories in these settings. Mm-hmm. Now, as the audio director, my personal crusade is to invest as much audio drama awesomeness as is possible into as many of these story settings as possible. So I am literally in the next 2 or 3 years, I'm looking at producing over 40 episodes of audio drama a year. And that includes adaptations of existing novels in the story settings, original audio dramas that stand alone in these settings, and we're really trying to push the envelope. So if there's anybody in the listening audience that is saying, ooh, I want to get into audio drama, I just don't know how to do it yet, send me an email at dave@roundtablepodcast.com and say, I want to do audio drama. And dude or ma'am, we will hook you up and we will get you into the pipeline and we'll be creating some awesomeness out that way. And that invitation extends to you, Eli, Brian, and Mike as well. If this sounds like something you want to play in, I'm telling you, it's huge.
Yeah, so and just to clarify, Ed Greenwood, he's the guy behind Forgotten Realms, right?
Yes. Right. He's the guy that created the campaign setting, New York Times bestselling author of numerous tomes. And he's the creative guy. Eventually, at some point in the process, every writer of audio drama will be on a Skype line with Ed Greenwood talking about their story. And if that's not incentive, I don't know.
It's wild.
It's epic.
How about
so that's what I'm doing.
Where can people go to find out Hadron if they're for some crazy reason not already aware of it?
Right. What you speak of is madness. However, HadronGospelHour.com. We're on Facebook at Facebook.com/HGH Show. Google us. We're up there next to CERN. We're pretty close. So it's CERN. And we're on Twitter, all the basic stuff. Instagram, Friendster. No, not on Friendster, but pretty much if you go to HadronGospelHour.com. You can listen to the episodes there. Or you can download us on iTunes or Stitcher or any other podcast ad that you have or app that you have.
Or follow the link in the liner notes.
Yeah. And thanks for listening.
Yeah. And Eli?
I am at forgeryleague.com. I won't ask you to spell Alba Salix right off the bat. But I'm on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, all those places as well. So you can tune in there.
That was a shrewd URL choice, Eli. Well done.
You just reminded me of my last piece of advice in regarding characters, and that is naming them. Be careful about characters that other people can't pronounce or change the pronunciation of throughout the production, or a name with a like lope where you pop every time someone says their name.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Think about
you
names.
You don't discover until you're in production. It's like, damn it.
Yep.
No, what we're learning here is if you can get a URL that sounds like it's on the dark web, go for it.
Words to live by.
Cool. And I'm Brian Lincoln. You can find all my stuff over at lincolnaudio.com. And thank you very much, guys. Hopefully this will become a regular thing on the Audio Drama Production Podcast.
Thanks, Brian. Awesome.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, guys.
Hi, everyone. It's Brian Lincoln. Thank you very much for listening. I plan on doing these about once a month, but I did want to say this to the audio drama production podcast community as a whole. I don't pretend that I have exclusive right to submit segments on this show, obviously, and while I will try to organize groups of people to talk about writing, I don't feel like I should be claiming exclusive rights to do this. So if anyone else is seeing that there's a topic they want to discuss that I'm really not approaching or seem to be ignoring or whatever, you know, feel free to contribute to this show in any way that you can. I mean, I think we've all figured out by now that this community really has a ton of ideas, a ton of insight, and I think it's stronger with more people contributing to it. So, you know, whether you want to talk about writing or anything, please keep contributing to this show. I love listening to it, and I felt like I had something to add, which is why I'm doing these, and I look forward to hearing what other people have to contribute as well. One last note, I do want to point out, maybe some of you are aware of this already, but one of the guests on this episode was Dave Robison, and there was a time back in the very beginning of the concept phase of my science fiction show that I'm writing, I went on his podcast, which is really a great podcast. The Roundtable podcast has two parts. First is called 20 Minutes With, where whoever the writing expert is for that fortnight will come on and talk about the craft of writing, how they do it for, you know, 20 plus minutes. And then the second show, the second week of the pair, will be a brainstorming session on a writing idea where Dave and his co-host, which is on really a rotational basis, plus the expert writer who was a guest in the first segment, we'll all come together to give feedback on a story pitch that a guest writer will have. So there'll be four people in the call, usually, and the guest writer will pitch a story idea, usually a novel, but not always. I came on that podcast and pitched my sci-fi audio drama idea. I believe I was the first audio drama situation on that show. I hope more of you will take up the mantle and find a way to get on that show, because I'd love to hear more audio drama pitches, but I was on there with Dave Robison, and his co-host was Christoph Laputka from the Leviathan Chronicles, and the guest writer who helped critique my story idea was Casey Wayland of We're Alive. So the four of us on there talking about my story pitch was really an enlightening experience. There's a wealth of information in there. The story's evolved quite a bit from that time, but I want to emphasize that anyone who's writing for audio drama, looking for resources, might find that conversation a bit enlightening. I certainly did. And I'll be giving some show notes to the audio drama production podcast guys, Matthew and Robert. So there should be a link in the show notes pointing you to that particular episode. If you do listen, I hope you enjoy it. Thank you very much. There's a document in the Facebook group for the audio drama production podcast where I share different potential ideas for future versions of this writing for audio drama segment. Please contribute ideas and suggest guests. We have quite a few already out of the gate, but I'm always looking for more ideas. These conversations are so much fun. if you're interested in being in on one of them, please contact through the Facebook group as well. That's where I'll be looking for the most part when I'm trying to organize these things. And finally, thanks to Robert and Matthew for building this community. I hope this segment does the community justice. It's a lot of fun to put together. I can already say that from doing one of them. And I plan to keep them coming. Feedback is appreciated. Thank you very much.
Still sound okay?
Yep, you sound good.
Sound like liquid sex, man. You kidding me?
Well, mission accomplished. I'll see you guys later.
My work is done here. Rides off into the sunset.